a text policy specialist with the Interpretations and Technical Advice Division of the Department of Revenue. I will be the facilitator for this public hearing. It is now 10:01 a.m. on Tuesday, June 6, 2023. We'd like to thank you all for taking the time to attend this public hearing and to provide us with your feedback. Please note that we are best able to consider your comments if you provide them in writing, which can be sent to me at ryanbe, that's R-Y-A-N-B-E, at dor.wa.gov. We will now begin the scheduled public hearing for solicitation of comments on the new rule, Washington Administrative Code 458-29A-200, otherwise referred to as Rule 29A-200, titled Leasehold Excise Tax, Taxable Rent, and Contract Rent. Other persons from the Department of Revenue present for this hearing include Atif Aziz in his role as the department's rules coordinator, Kathy Holder in her role as management analyst for the Interpretations and Technical Advice Division, who will be monitoring our recording equipment this afternoon as this meeting is being recorded, and also Gil Brewer, the Senior Assistant Director. We are conducting this meeting electronically, and we do not have other parties physically present for this public hearing. Besides Department of Revenue staff, we have other parties on the call for this public hearing. Due to rulemaking requirements, participants at the public hearing who have comments must make their comments verbally. As such, we will not be reviewing questions or comments provided in the chat function for this hearing. If you do not feel comfortable voicing your comments during this hearing, we suggest that you email your comments to me in writing at ryanbe@dor.wa.gov. I will now read down the list of participants, and when you are called, please go off mute and, for the record, state your name. If you are representing someone, please state who you are representing and whether you have comments that you would like to make later in this public hearing. Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and go down the list. The first item I have on the list is a phone number. It is 206-799-0348.
Yeah, excuse me. Yes, that's me.
Could you identify yourself? Let us know if you're representing someone, and let us know if you're going to have comments later.
My name is Terry Hodges. I'm not representing anyone. Excuse me. And what was the last piece of information you wanted?
Whether or not you'll like to make a comment later on.
No, basically, it's curiosity. When I read the WAC, I still wasn't sure what it was all about. So that's what I'm trying to learn.
Great. Well, thank you for joining us today. I'm going to move on to the next phone number I have on the list, which is 239-301-7571.
Hi, it's John Fusco. I'm calling on behalf of the Hertz Corporation, and I don't expect to have any comments in this session.
Thank you, John. I'm going to move on to the next phone number, which is 360-676-2500.
Hi, this is Tamara Sobjak. I'm with the Port of Bellingham, and I don't expect to have comments.
Great. Thank you so much. The next person I have listed is, and I'm sorry if I mispronounce anyone's name today. I'm going to do my best. Adam Lemieux.
Hi, it's Adam Lemieux. I'm with the Port of Everett, and I do not anticipate comments today.
Thank you, Adam. The next person I have listed is Bob Marion. Hearing no response, I'm going to move on to the next person on the list, which is Brent Keck.
Yes, I'm Brent Keck. I'm with Everett Community College. I don't anticipate making comments.
Thank you, Brent. The next individual.
I'm sorry to interrupt. My name is Bob Marion. I represent the Port of Everett. I don't plan on making any comments. I had some technical issues with my phone while you called my name, I believe.
No worries, Bob. Thanks. Thanks for clarifying. The next individual I have listed is Brian Wurst.
This is Brian Wurst on behalf of Spokane Airports. I don't anticipate comments this morning.
Great. Thank you, Brian. The next individual I have listed is Buck Taft.
Yes, I'm Buck Taft with the Tri-Cities Airport in Port of Pasco, and I do anticipating making comments today. I just didn't think I would be the first one down the list, so.
Okay. Well, we're not doing comments yet. We just want to know for later, so you might not end up being the first one.
Okay, great. Thanks.
The next individual I have listed is Charlie Fleiger.
This is Charlie with Spokane International Airports. I don't anticipate having comments today.
Great, thank you. Next on my list is Chris Herman.
This is Chris Herman. I represent the Washington Public Ports Association and our port members. I am not anticipating comments today.
Great, thank you, Chris. I have another Chris listed next, Chris Rasmussen.
Yeah, I'm Chris Rasmussen. I represent the Port of Clarkston, and I will not be making comments today. Thank you.
Okay. Great. Thank you, Chris. Next person I have listed is Heather Codewell. I'm not hearing any response from Heather. I'm going to move on to the next person listed, which is Frank Schmelick.
Frank Schmelick, I'm the general counsel for the Washington Public Ports Association, and I anticipate making comments.
Great. Thank you, Frank. The next person I have listed is Devin Gomboski.
Hi, good morning. Devin Gomboski here on behalf of Gomboski Public Affairs. I will not be making any comments today.
Great. Thank you, Devin. The next item on my list is Diana Carlin.
Good morning, Diana Carlin, on behalf of the Port of Pasco with Gordon Thomas Honeywell Government Relations. I don't plan on making any comments today, as my client will be. Thank you.
Thank you, Diana. Next up is Anna Diaz.
Good morning. City of Vancouver, I don't anticipate making any comments today.
Thank you, Anna. Next on my list is Dylan Doty.
Good morning, Dylan Doty, contract lobbyist with Enterprise Rent-A-Car. I will not be making comments, but the client likely will. Thank you.
Thank you, Dylan. Next up is Tony Ears.
Yeah, Tony Ayers of King County International Airport, Boeing Field. I do not anticipate making any comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Tony. Next up, I have Emily Shea.
Hi, this is Emily Shea with the Association of Washington Business. I do not anticipate any questions or comments.
Thank you, Emily. Next up, I have Eric Yakovich.
Eric Yakovich with the Port of Kalama. No comments.
Thank you, Eric. Next up, I have Eric Abel.
Hi, Eric Abel, Spokane Airports. I will not be making comments.
Thank you, Eric. Next on my list is Fred Hall.
Hi, this is Fred Hall, City of Renton, and I don't anticipate on having any comments.
Next up is Gary Fujita.
It's Gary Fujita from Eisenhower Carlson, and I do intend to make comments on behalf of the Washington Public Ports Association.
Thank you, Gary. Next up, I have Garmin Newsom.
Good morning, Garmin Newsom, City of Burien. I don't anticipate having comments.
Thank you, Garmin. Next, I have Elizabeth Harper.
Liz Harper-Detweiler.
Hertz, Dollar and Thrifty, and no comments.
Thank you. Next up, I have Daniel Holt.
Hi, this is Daniel Holt. I'm with HMS Host. We're a concessionaire at a couple airports. No comments today, but after listening, I'll probably be submitting some to you directly via email.
Okay. Thanks for letting me know, Daniel. Next up, I have Robert Hunsinger.
Yeah, good morning. Robert Hunsinger with Enterprise Holdings, representing Enterprise Alamo and National Rent-A-Car. I will not be speaking today.
Great. Thank you, Robert. Next on my list is Isne Singh.
Yes, I am here from Auburn, and I might write an email if there is any comment.
Okay, great. Thank you for letting me know. Next up, I have Jamie Thayer.
Yes, this is Jamie Thayer, Port of Longview, and I don't anticipate any comments.
Thank you. Next up, I have Jennifer Bly.
Yeah, this is Jen Bly on behalf of myself, and I don't anticipate comments today. Thank you.
Thank you, Jennifer. Next up, I have Jeremiah Wiley.
I'm Jeremiah Wiley. I represent the Port of Bremerton, and I do not plan on making comments today.
Thank you, Jeremiah. Next up, I have Jessica Brogan. Hearing no response from Jessica, I'm going to move on to the next person listed, which is Jill Brownfield.
Hi, good morning. This is Jill Brownfield. I'm with the Port of Anacortes, and I do not anticipate any comments today.
Thank you, Jill. The next person I have on my list is John Nutter.
Good morning, John Nutter, representing the Port of Port Angeles. No anticipated comments today.
Thank you, John. Next up, I have Christy Miller.
I'm Christy Miller, representing the Port of Bremerton. I don't anticipate making any comments today.
Thank you, Christy. Next up, I have Kristen Garcia.
Good morning, Kristen Garcia from City of Arlington, and I don't anticipate making comments today.
Thank you, Kristen. The next person on my list is Leona Langlois.
I'm Leona Langlois, and I'm with Teresa Johnson, CPA, and I don't anticipate any comments.
Thank you. Next up on my list is Lisa Kam.
Hi, I'm Lisa Kam with the City of Issaquah, and I don't anticipate comments today.
Next up, I have Robert Mahon.
Good morning, Bob Mahon. I'm with the law firm of Perkins Coie, and I'm representing Spokane Airports. And I think my client will be making comments, and I may have a small additional comment.
Great, thank you. Next up, I don't have a last name. I just have a Mariano.
Hi, my name is Liz. I'm representing Mariano from DLG, and I may have no comments. In that case, I will send an email, or he will send an email. Thank you.
Great. I will keep an eye out for that email. Next up, I have Mark Hugh.
This is Mark Hugh. I'm just representing myself. I may have comments, so I'd like to be on the list, but I may pass when the opportunity comes up.
Understood. Thank you, Mark. Next up, I have Mark Johnson.
Good morning, Mark Johnson, Senior Vice President of Policy and Government Affairs for the Washington Retail Association. And yes, I would like to make a few comments. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Mark. Next up, we have Matt Peach.
Hello, Matt Peach with the Port of Olympia. I will not be making any comment.
Thank you, Matt. Next on the list is Meg Greendling.
Hi, this is Meg Rimling from Mod Pizza, and I will not be making any comments.
Thank you, Meg. Next up is Megan Chian.
Hi, this is Megan Chan. Not with anyone today. Not going to be making any comments.
Thank you, Megan. Next up, I have Misha Siebel.
Hi, this is Nisha Seibel, and I'm with Opsahl Dawson and Company, and I will not be making any comments.
Thank you. Mike Folkers?
This is Mike Folkers with the Port of Grays Harbor. I do not have any comments at this time.
Thank you, Mike. Next up is Dixie Nimi.
Yes, Dixie Nimi with Enterprise Holding, representing Enterprise Alamo National, and I would like to make comments.
Thank you, Dixie. Next up, I have a listing that says Port of Walla Walla.
Hi, Pat Ray, Port of Walla Walla. I will not be making comments today.
Thank you, Pat. Next up is Riza Montes.
Yes, Riza Montes of Van Speldman. I don't anticipate making any comments.
Thank you. Next up, I have Rob Schultz.
Hi, good morning, Ryan. Rob Schultz with Spokane International Airport, and I will be making comments today.
Great. Thank you, Rob.
Thank you.
Next up, I have Scott Goodrich.
Good morning. Scott Goodrich representing the Port of Vancouver. I do not anticipate comments today.
Thank you, Scott. Next up, I have no last name, but a name Shaquila.
No comments today. Okay. No.
I'm Are you representing listening. Someone?
No, I'm just listening. Yeah.
Great, thank you. Next up, I have Sophie Dumit.
Hi, Sophie Dumit with Gordon Thomas Honeywell Government Affairs, and I don't have any comments today.
Thank you, Sophie. Next up, I have Tara Hayes.
Hi, Tara Hayes. I'm with the Port of Everett. I will not be making any comments today.
Thank you, Tara. Next on the list is Tina Drennan.
Good morning. This is Tina Drennan. I'm from the Port of Edmonds. I don't anticipate making any comments today.
Thank you, Tina. Next up, I have Cindy Turner.
Good morning, Cindy Turner, City of Vancouver, and I do not anticipate making any comments today.
Thank you, Cindy. Next up, I have Victoria Dean. Thank you, Victoria. Next up, I have Vijay Patel.
Good morning, Vijay Patel with A1 Hospitality, Pasco, Washington. I don't anticipate any comments today.
Thank you, Vijay. Next up on my list is Walla Walla Electric.
I believe they put in comments they were not able to speak.
Okay, thank you. Next up, I have Amanda Wallner.
Yes, I'm Amanda Wallner with the City of Richland, and I do anticipate having comments.
Thank you, Amanda. Next up, I have Warren Hendrickson.
Good morning, all. Warren Hendrickson, representing the Port of Olympia. While an important issue to the port, I don't anticipate further comments today. Thank you.
Thank you, Warren. And then I have Wendy Smith.
Good morning, Wendy Smith, Port of Shelton. No comments today.
Thank you, Wendy. That completes my list, but just in case anyone signed on after I started, is there anyone who has not identified themselves and whether they represent someone and whether they have comments? Hearing nothing, I'm just going to ask the participants, just because I'm hearing some background noise occasionally, if you're not speaking, please mute yourself. I'm going to return now to my portion. This public hearing is being conducted pursuant to the provisions of Chapters 34.05 RCW, the Administrative Procedures Act. The purpose of this hearing is to solicit comments from the public on the proposed Rule 29A-200. This hearing was announced through publication in the State Register as WSR 23-10-027, which was filed with the Code Reviser on April 26, 2023. In going through this proposed rule draft, if you do plan to provide comments, please wait until comments are requested before providing your comment. If you do have a comment, please use the raise hand feature, which is located under reactions at the top right of your screen. When your name is called, please unmute yourself using the mute icon or the mic icon. Identify yourself for the record and provide your comment. When finished, please put yourself back on mute. We will consider any and all comments received about the proposed rule. We appreciate receiving written comments and will evaluate all comments as we proceed with the rulemaking process. We are extending the comment period for comments on this rule draft. You may now send written comments to my attention no later than Monday, July 10th, 2023. In this manner, the department can fully consider your comments before proceeding with future rulemaking activities. This public hearing will address the substantive changes that were made to the proposed rule since the previous public hearing in June of last year. Please note that other non-substantive changes were also made to this rule, but we will not be discussing them in detail here. Non-substantive changes include grammatical updates and revisions, along with organizational updates intended to increase the readability of the rule. The changes were not intended to impact the substantive meaning of the rule. I will go through the substantive changes that were made throughout the proposed rule draft and then state the reason for the change. Copies of this rule are available on the Department of Revenue website. I will be reading from page 6 of the recently filed CR 102. I'm now going to read section 3C, special circumstances, concession arrangements for retail sales. If the rent is based in whole or in part on a percentage of sales and includes payment for the leasehold interest, as well as a concession or other right granted by the lessor, there is a rebuttable presumption that the contract rent consists of the first 8% of sales plus any prepaid rent or minimum rent required under the lease. The department will consider any portion of the contract rent that exceeds that figure as prepayment, as payment for the concession or other right granted by the lessor. If either party to a lease agreement believe the fair market value differs from the presumed amount, they may submit documentation to the department demonstrating the fair market value for comparable property with similar use. The department will consider this documentation when determining the value of the leasehold interest. This section contains several changes from the previous draft. First, we have added a rebuttable presumption. This allows the department to operate using a set standard during audits, while also giving taxpayers a means to challenge valuation. We've added language that addresses prepaid rent and contract rent. This change came about due to your questions and comments about how Section 3C interacts with Section 4, addressing expenditures for improvement. We've also clarified that Section 3C applies to retail sales areas. This change came about due to your questions and comments about the application of Section 3A. I will now go through the questions that we received after the previous hearing. Question 1. If an agreement contains a concession right, as well as calls for expenditures for improvements to be included as part of contract rent pursuant to existing subsection 4, is contract rent still limited to the 8% of sales as noted in new subsection 3C? In response to this question, the department updated the language to now read that, quote, the contract rent consists of the first 8% of sales plus any prepaid rent or minimum rent required under the lease, end quote. Question 2, is there an example you could send me of how that might play out in a crop share lease where the Department of Natural Resources shares in a percentage of the harvested crop? In response to this question, the department updated the language to clarify that Section 3C only applies to concession arrangements and retail sales areas. Question 3, will the new language in WAC 458-29A-203C have retroactive effect, or is it intended to be prospective only? If the latter, what date does the Department of Revenue intend to have the new language take effect? As drafted, the rule incorporates existing department practice and interpretation under statute, and there has been no change in statute. This supports a conclusion that the 8% rebuttable presumption applies both to periods before the effective date of the rule and after the effective date of the rule. However, the department recognizes that this issue is complex and that hardship could result for some taxpayers if the 8% rebuttable presumption is applied to prior periods. Accordingly, we are seeking legal and policy feedback regarding how the department should administer past periods. We will consider and evaluate any feedback provided, and we will thereafter provide guidance on how the rebuttable presumption applies to periods before the effective date of the rule. Question 4. How should the new language in Washington Administrative Code 458-29A-200-3C be applied in the following scenarios? Leases which have a percentage rent component which is very small relative to the component of rent which is traditional real estate-based rent. Leases where the payment of percentage rent is conditional on the tenant achieving an annual gross sales threshold. Or during periods where the tenant has low gross sales or no gross sales. In response to this question, the department updated the language of the rule to clarify that contract rent consists of the first 8% of sales, plus any prepaid rent or minimum rent required under the lease. We will now proceed to the public comment portion of this hearing. If you have a comment, please first identify yourself for the record after you've raised your hand and I have called on you. Then please identify any organization you are representing. As mentioned earlier, we also appreciate receiving comments or testimony in writing. If you have comments or testimony, you may send it to me by email at ryanbe@dor.wa.gov. So at this point, I'm going to ask that anyone who would like to make a comment, please indicate. And I see 3 raised hands. The first one I see, and someone said they don't want to go first. I don't remember who it was, but the first one I see is Robert Mahan.
Thanks, Ryan. I'll let Spokane Airports make their own comments. I did want to note for you that a letter was submitted earlier this morning requesting a delay in the rulemaking to allow more meaningful stakeholder engagement on the changes from the 101 draft to the 102 draft, which are quite substantial and substantive. We also asked that the department consider doing a small business impact statement, which seems warranted in this case. But I'll otherwise just ask that the department note the letter and include that in the rulemaking record.
Thank you, Robert. And I'll just note that we did, in fact, receive an email this morning. We also received a follow-up. I think the follow-up came at 9:46. So. We have not yet had a meaningful opportunity to review the contents and respond.
Thank you.
Okay, next up, I have Frank Schmelick.
Thank you. I am the General Counsel for the Washington Public Ports Association, which represents some 71 Washington Public Port Districts throughout the state. The Port Districts as a group probably are the group that has the largest number of leases compared to any other category of government. The size and the scope of leases from our members span an incredible width from small, leases that involve retail sales from small port districts with a handful of leases to very large port districts like the Port of Seattle and Port of Tacoma to a port district like the Port of Bellingham that has approximately 400 leases, maybe 100 of those involve some kind of retail sales. The other thing to note, I think, is that leases span a wide variety of activity, from airports to boatyards to restaurants, a lot of things involving retail sales. Next thing I want to note is that RCW 5308080 provides that instructs ports to lease all their lands or stock and real and personal property for such purposes upon such term as the Port Commission deems proper. And why is that important? Because it leads to an incredible variation across the state. I've been representing ports for 35 years of what various ports do. from fiber to restaurants to barbershops to clothing sales to all kinds of stuff. The other thing I want to note is the ports have as a mission under 5308.245 a public purpose to engage in economic development program, including economic development programs that include occupational job training, placement, job advancement, job retention. My co-counsel here, colleague Gary Fujita, also representing the ports, will be addressing some aspects, but I did want to focus on 3C and tell you that in our view, the proposed change will negatively impact ports by increasing business risk. And I don't know if the department has considered the business risks that will accrue to ports if you change this rule, and I will explain why. Most ports negotiate lease rates, trying to get the very best lease price they can for the citizens and their revenue, frankly, because ports have limited taxing ability, so a lot of the revenue has to come from lease revenue. And what they typically do is negotiate some form of a flat lease payment. A monthly payment is typical, and then seek a percentage of sales. And those two concepts are inextricably linked because there's only one fair market value for the lease. And if you raise one, then you necessarily have to lower the other. You can't raise them both and demand the tenant pay it. The tenants are going to say, wait, if you want to charge us 8% of our retail sales, then the monthly rent will be less. And so these two factors operate together to allow a port district to balance the risk, balance their revenue, and achieve their important governmental goals of that the legislature has provided to ports of economic development, occupational job training, and revenue. So risk, ports moderate risk by increasing the monthly fixed rate and reducing the percentage sales component. So if DOR mandates an 8% in all transactions, then the monthly rent will necessarily decrease and the risk will increase. You then are essentially saying to ports, it is DOR's considered opinion in the leasing world that you should increase your risk by increasing your monthly, increasing the percent sales and decreasing the amount of money you take up front. So the unintended consequence of this, where you say, in whole or in part on a percentage of sales, means that you are telling ports, we need you to take more business risk. We at the Department of Revenue have determined 8% is the right number. And I might say parenthetically, there is no evidence that's based on anything other than someone's opinion, but that necessarily means more business risk. I'll give you a concrete example. The Port of Friday Harbor takes a monthly rent for the Downriggers restaurant and a percentage of their sales. If they increase the percentage of sales, they have to lower the monthly rent. And the classic buzzwords are engage with us in a public-private partnership. Lease negotiations are both fluid and complex. Each lease and each tenant presents a unique factual pattern. When you consider the interplay of economic development, leasing property, gaining revenue, a portfolio of tenants, each is unique, and ports seek again to maximize return and minimize risk. Artificially limiting one of the two primary variables necessarily limits the negotiating capacity, and increases risk limits return. Next thing, ports are competitive regionally, nationally, and globally to bring businesses to their ports. Within that constraint of contract rent, ports understand that and use a combination of fixed rent and percentage rent to attract business. Again, if you constrain that process by an artificial formula, you will put ports at a competitive disadvantage. And then finally, as I mentioned, ports have dual missions of job, economic development, job creation. So within the existing constraints of contract rent, ports seek to accomplish their missions. This requires a nimble approach to the marketplace. An artificial limit on one of the variables will impair this. And the ports are already bound to collect contract rent and that meets the contract rent test. One presumes that the fixed percentage will make it easier for DOR to audit leases, and you mentioned that, to determine if contract rent is being collected. However, this alone and does not justify constraining the ability of ports to negotiate the most favorable terms for each lease. If DOR is concerned about its ability to look at a multi-faceted rent stream, it could, in cooperation with the WPAPA, develop an analytical tool that would test the rent stream against the contract rent requirements. In particular, with this rebuttable presumption, with all due respect, meets the kind of definition of we're from the government, we're here to help you. We'll create a rebuttable presumption that helps us do our job, but otherwise constrains you. And think of all these small ports that then call and say, well, we really need to challenge this. And how do you challenge it after you enter into a lease? So let's say it's a rebuttable presumption and you come in a year later and say, well, we disagree. Then what happens in this ordered system? Whereas contract rent is much more easy to understand and recognizes the fluidity of rent negotiations and the incredible span across the port industry of a variety of leasehold models, all designed to maximize revenue, minimize risk. So those are my comments. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you very much for those comments. And I believe you said that you work with Mr. Fujita. Did Mr. Fujita want to go next? I see you also have your hand up.
Yeah, Dixie, if you're right with that, I'm happy to go next. Okay. My name is Gary Fujita. I'm with the law firm of Eisenhower Carlson in Tacoma, Washington, and I'm here representing the Washington Public Ports Association. I think that one of the ways I looked at this when we started was just understanding what the leasehold excise tax is. And that, of course, is a tax that was adopted as a proxy for the property tax that was not being paid by an exempt owner, lessor, and therefore the benefit of that exemption passed through to the lessee. And so the lessee, not necessarily having its own exemption, was able, the state was able to extract some amount of property tax in exchange for the use of that public property. And so the history, as I understand the leasehold excise tax, was to retrieve what the state was not getting from the property tax. So that, I start with that understanding, is that we're trying to replace a tax revenue that escapes because of the government ownership. So we start with that notion. So when we look at the our focus, of course, is this 8% of sales, is that if you look at that methodology, and it depends on how often the lease payments are made. They could be made monthly, quarterly, semi-annually, annually. But what that does is that creates a scenario where the market rate of the property is kind of moving up and down. And it could go up, it could actually go below market rents, for example, in the COVID period, when probably the value of some of those leaseholds were considerably less than when properties were able to function at 100% of their capacity. And when you compare that volatility in the value of the lease from month to month or whatever periodic period it is, that's totally inconsistent with the property tax, because the property tax just takes a value as of January 1 of the taxable year, and then you just pay on that value in the year that the taxes are paid. This leasehold excise tax doesn't mirror up to that, and that seems like a philosophical flaw, that understanding that it's appropriate to maybe find adjustments if the contract rent is below market value. We don't perceive this as the solution to that problem. The other point, I think Frank alluded to this, is that when we're looking at the value of what that leasehold is, can sometimes be confused with the value of the concession. And so if you go back to the definition of contract rent, it specifically excludes the concession, that all we're looking for is the value of that leasehold. Well, the 8% of sales on its face is picking up the concession portion. I know that the debate is there any part of that concession that is really value of the leasehold? But the fact that it fluctuates up and down is an indication that you're really taxing the concession. You're not really taxing the leasehold, because a leasehold in the property tax context should be static through that whole period. So we think that what this approach can do is it can result in actually assessing leasehold excise tax above market value because it's picking up some part of the concession. And one of the problems with the rebuttable presumption is that because contract rent is defined, that's a tax imposing section. And if there's any ambiguity about what that means, the courts have said that you have to construe that against the state. And because there seems to be some ambiguity about what the contract rent and taxable rent is, the rule creates a rebuttable presumption, which is a signal that there's some ambiguity in what the actual taxable value is. And so what this rebuttable presumption does, it takes the obligation of the state to determine what part of the concession should not be taxed and shifts that burden onto the taxpayers to come up with some methodology to rebut that presumption. And consequently, state may end up taxing well more than what it's entitled to tax. So that the rebuttable presumption is problematic because it does shift the burden of the state determining what's taxable rent and shifting that burden over to the taxpayer to show what is not taxable rent. We don't really have a good idea where this 8% came from. And I guess until we get a better understanding of how that was determined, it seems like this is just simply an arbitrary and capricious standard that's being imposed. And because it's arbitrary and capricious, I mean, at this point, we have a lot of difficulty with that. There's no evidence that this 8% has been regionalized to compare, say, Northeast Washington from Southwest Washington or Central Puget Sound from Central Washington or Eastern Washington. And we're just assuming that 8% applies across the state. And clearly the economy in this state is not consistent with that notion. And so we think that there has to be a better understanding of where that 8% comes from. The other problem with that 8% is that, and I alluded to this earlier, is that it just always assumes that we need to move the market value up. But during times, if we're going to abandon the property tax concept, we're really going to do this periodic market value, then there ought to be times, for example, in COVID, where this rule allows the taxable rent to drop below what the contract rent is. But this rule doesn't do that. It always presumes that we're going to increase the contract rent to a taxable rent, because that's the assumption is what the fair market value of the rent is. But fair market value could obviously be below that during times like a pandemic. Those are the substantive comments. But we also wonder, for a lot of our tenants, they are small businesses. And when we look at the rule, it says that there was no small business impact statement prepared because there wasn't really, the department was simply administering the statute based on past practices. I think for most of us that came as a surprise. There's no rebuttable presumption in the statute. And so where this 8% presumption came from, it can create problems for for small businesses who now have to figure out how they're going to value their leasehold in order to come to a value that's less than minimum rent plus the 8% of sales. And that is an expensive proposition. These, especially in airports where there's limited access or based on the TSA practices, the market value of these premises are odd. And so finding appraisers that have the skill set to appraise these odd fact patterns may be hard for small businesses to obtain. Plus, if they can obtain them, they're likely to be very expensive. And as a result of that impact, we think the department really should be doing a small business impact statement on exactly what it's going to cost small businesses to comply with this new requirement in the rule, that now the burden has shifted to these small businesses to prove that their contract rent is the fair market value rent, and that the minimum rent plus the 8% is beyond fair market value. So we would urge you to rethink that aspect of this rulemaking, that this is going to impact small business, and they should be an evaluation of what cost that's going to place on small business. And that concludes any of my comments.
Thank you for your comments. Next up, I have Dixie Nieme.
Good morning. My name is Dixie Nieme, and I'm with Enterprise Holdings, representing Enterprise Alamo National Car Rental in Washington State. So Enterprise Holdings in Washington, we have over 80 rental car locations throughout the state and over 1,300 employees. This proposed rule would directly impact 6 of our locations. We oppose the proposed changes and would welcome a stakeholder process to develop language that results in a more accurate measure of contract rent. Specifically, the proposed changes would impose significant non-minor costs on all concessionaires as it defines contract rent in a manner that does not reflect the actual fair market value of the property. Despite statements in the CR 102 that the proposed rule does not impose more than minor costs on businesses, this arbitrary formula proposed by the draft would result in a greater than 400% increase in taxes to our organization. Given that the actual impact of the language does not match statements in the CR 102 regarding costs to businesses, we strongly believe that the Department of Revenue should pause rulemaking, convene all stakeholders, and develop more refined language that reflects the intended economic impact. Thank you for your consideration of our comments. We would welcome the opportunity to work towards a more equitable solution to this matter.
Thank you for your comments. Next up, I have Mark Johnson.
Thank you. Good morning. Mark Johnson, Senior Vice President of Policy and Government Affairs for the Washington Retail Association. We're a trade association representing over 4,500 storefronts throughout the state of Washington, from the world's largest retailer on down to the sole proprietor. We have a number of members with operations in a number of facilities, as mentioned by these individuals on the phone. We are the folks that are the people that have the small retail establishments in these airports and other facilities. So we're very concerned about the extreme economic impact this will be imposing on our members, and to continue their viability, often on very small margins that they operate on currently. As was mentioned by previous speakers, we believe that pushing the pause button and giving us more time to inform our members and gain comments would be beneficial to the department in this rule writing procedure. Also, as I mentioned, a number of my members are smaller members, and so the small business economic impact statement would be very helpful in this respect as well. So with that in mind, we encourage the department to take a pause, give us more time to gather comments and produce those. So we'll be submitting written comments as well down the road, but we would appreciate your consideration of these. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Next up, I have Rob Schultz.
Sorry about that. Couldn't find my cursor for a second there. Thanks, Ryan. Good morning, everyone. My name is Rob Schultz. I'm the Chief Financial Officer for Spokane International Airport. Spokane Airport strongly opposes the proposed rule as currently written. I will get into specific concerns here in a second, but before that, just wanted to address something, Ryan. Many organizations around the state are just learning about this in the last week or so. We've talked to other organizations that just learned about it yesterday. So I think toward what Mark just said, I think it makes sense to just delay the adoption, the date of intended adoption of this by at least 90 days to allow organizations not just to learn about the rule, but also to calculate the very significant impact from it. So with that said, Spokane will be submitting our written comments to the Department of Revenue. We get our verbal comments essentially on record during this hearing. One of the first concerns that we have with this is just the significant departure from the proposed rule under CR 101 to CR 102. The language dramatically changed, and DOR has simply just not provided enough time for those impacted by the proposed changes to adequately digest the changes and calculate the impact from it. Specifically, one of the current concerns that we have with this rule essentially is the 8% of sales. In our opinion, it has no factual basis for estimating contract rent. The 8% essentially was derived by DOR from an internet search. Department of Revenue owes it to the public entities and our business partners to do more research on estimating contract rent rather than a simple Google search for this. Second, with this, the proposed rule calls for the first 8% of sales plus any prepaid or minimum rent. If 8% is the correct percentage to use, and it's a very big if, then adding anything on top of the 8% simply will just lead to the contract rent exceeding that percentage. So by adding prepaid or minimum rent, will lead to essentially taxing on the same sales as it relates to airport percentage rent agreements, and I expect many others on this call. It would just require the lessee to pay the greater, or lessee to pay it twice on that amount. The lessee pays the greater typically, and is the greater of a minimum rent or percent rent. Way it's structured right now with the language, that's gonna lead essentially to double taxation on that same sales. Just the proposed rule just shows a little bit of a lack of understanding in terms of how the percentage rent contracts work on this. Finally, this has already been talked to by a couple people, but Gary specifically, but leasehold excise tax is intended to be in lieu of property tax. Therefore, it's really logical to think that the let amount that would be taxed under here would be the same as what would be taxed under property taxes. However, that's not what this rule achieves. This rule essentially would require those lessees of public property to pay significantly more than those lessees of a private entity under a similar arrangement. So also to Dixie's point, we need an equitable solution to this. And so one that will not hurt municipalities, will not hurt our business partners, especially small businesses that Gary mentioned. So the proposed rule as it's currently written will have a detrimental impact on economic development at public properties and facilities. So we urge the Department of Revenue to delay the adoption date of this and to engage with stakeholders to help craft a rule that's actually gonna make sense and is equitable. And that concludes my comments. Thank you, Ryan.
Thank you for your comments, Rob. Next up, I have Buck Taft.
Thank you. I'm Buck Taft. I am the director of the Tri-Cities Airport and work for the Port of Pasco. And I agree with what a lot of folks said, especially Rob, being in another airport. But the Port of Pasco and Tri-Cities Airport are opposed to this proposed rulemaking as currently written. This increase will put government entities at a severe disadvantage when trying to recruit businesses for economic development purposes on leased ground. I don't know if you're aware, but airports are unable to sell land and are required to lease it. And it takes a lot of work to convince businesses to lease land instead of buy land. This increase will create a hurdle too high for developers to want to do business on leased government-owned land. This increase will kill any chance airports have to develop land with any sort of revenue lease. Businesses entered into these leases with an assumption that if leasehold taxes were to increase, it would be at reasonable levels, like majority of taxes they're already required to pay. We are seeing that some of our leases could be impacted up to 145%, and this increase puts our long-term leases in jeopardy. Leasehold excise tax was designed to replace the property tax and not dramatically increase the sales tax. Along with leasehold tax, some tenants are also required to pay property tax on assessed value of their improved buildings. This process seems to be rushed and not allowing for quality input from the business community. The Department of Revenue has made significant changes to its proposed rule and gave the industry very little, if any, time to respond. Again, the Port of Pasco and Tri-Cities Airport are opposed to this rule change and will also be submitted our comments in writing. So thank you.
Thank you for your comments. I'm not seeing any other raised hands from anyone who hasn't spoken. I do see two raised hands, but I believe they just weren't lowered. So if you have no additional comments, I'd ask that you please lower your hand, and I'm seeing none. So, Mr. Fujita, did you have a comment?
I don't have a comment. Maybe you'll get to this in terms of the process, but this is being recorded. Will that be something that will be publicly posted, or do we have to ask you specifically for a copy of the recording? How exactly? And again, maybe you're going to address that, but I thought I'd just ask that now.
You know, I've never gotten that request before. I don't know the answer, but I can certainly look into that and email you after this hearing if you'd like to know. Okay, I'm just going to return to my script now to close this out for today. So before closing this public hearing, I will recap the rulemaking process. This has been the public hearing on the proposed rule 29A200 titled Leasehold Excise Tax, Taxable Rent and Contract Rent. Based on the comments made today or received in writing, additional non-substantive changes may be made before the final revised rule is filed for adoption with the code reviser. Unlike today's public hearing, the final filing of a rule is not a public process. This filing is just a filing of the notice of adoption. Absent an emergency adoption or unless otherwise stated, a rule becomes effective 31 days after filing for adoption. To the extent that rule changes are the result of specific statutory changes, such changes are effective on the effective date of the law change, regardless of when the rule is adopted. Thank you for participating in this public hearing. If you are not on the department's rules notifications list and did not receive a notice of today's hearing directly from the department, but want to be kept informed of future rulemaking activities related to this rule, please send me your name, mailing address, and email address. This public hearing is now adjourned. For the record, the time is now 10:58 a.m. And Kathy, I'll ask you to now stop the recording. And thank you, everyone.